Welcome to the asylum. Well, that's right. That's where we all live. The asylum that is Political U.S. of A. 2012. My God. By the way, the Virginia House of Delegates today passed a revised version of the Republican-sponsored bill that has been referred to, and rightly so, as mechanical rape. The new bill will require women to receive an external trans-abdominal ultrasound rather than the mechanical rape they had first approved, referred to as transvaginal ultrasound. See, it's rape when you don't agree, when you say no, I don't think it'll pass. Virginia. Of course, I lived in Virginia when it was still illegal for people of different races to get married. So it hasn't been that long ago, truth seekers. The governor of Virginia, Bob McDonnell, who has been mentioned many times to be a vice presidential candidate, revoked his support for the original bill just moments before the House of Delegates began debate, saying, Bob said, that the government did not have the power to require the transvaginal procedure. In a statement, he said, mandating an invasive procedure in order to give informed consent is not a proper role for the state. No person should be directed to undergo an invasive procedure by the state without their consent as a precondition to another medical procedure. For this reason, I'm requesting that the General Assembly amend this bill to explicitly state that no woman in Virginia will have to undergo a transvaginal ultrasound involuntarily. I'm asking the General Assembly instead to state in this legislation that only a transabdominal ultrasound will be required. Oh. So rather than internal rape, it's now an external rape. The woman's right to control her body has been raped. Either way. So let's not pretend here that Governor Bob has decided to come to the defense of women. Should a doctor determine that another form of ultrasound may be necessary to provide the necessary images and information, that will be an issue for the doctor and the patient. The government will have no role in that medical decision. What? But Bob, you're saying that the doctor and the, patient? Really? Pregnancy is a disease. A woman having a right to privacy compounds the disease. And a doctor and a woman, but you're saying that there is a right to privacy where it concerns an ultrasound, but not where it concerns the determination to have an abortion? Are you goddamn crazy? Oh, never mind. What am I saying? Kathy Byron, that's Republican, the sponsor of the original bill, can you believe that? Said she supports the new version. She said, I rise, so to speak, in support of this bill. I rise in support of this bill. We will be one state of seven, strengthening their informed consent law. Informed consent is gibberish. That's right-wing speak for invading the privacy of a woman and her doctor in a very intimate, personal, private moment. They call that now informed consent. Well, we have to make sure that the ladies understand what they're doing. You know, they want an abortion. They might be under the influence of something. So we want them to have this extra procedure. That's why I sponsored the bill.
Democrats said they were not satisfied with the changes or with the fact that they were introduced right before the vote on the bill took place.
A delegate named David Toscano, a Democrat, said, I think we need to spend time with this. We shouldn't be playing doctor on the House floor with this kind of language. The public has an interest in this bill and has not seen it until, well, 20 minutes ago. Are you out of your goddamn mind, David? Why do you come across like a typical Democrat? Why don't you stand on the floor and raise holy Billy hell? Why don't you scream and yell and pound your desk? Why don't you take your shoe off and do a Khrushchev on these bastards? Why don't you say, what in the hell are we doing? But since you're a Democrat, you weaselly little bastard, no, you stand up and say, well, now I don't think we should be, you know, we only got this thing 20 minutes ago. This bill needs debate. Debate! Debate! Members of the state legislature speculated today that Republicans were looking for a way to rewrite the bill to avoid having to fully back down from it. Now, why do we talk about this so much? Like we talk about this religious crap so much? Because the Republicans have turned our political system into an arena for the most disgusting, vicious invasions of a woman's privacy since, I don't know, since when? The Salem witch burnings? Since when? And, you know, why? Why do Republicans feel all of a sudden, you know, we've discussed this over and over again. I frankly think it's because Republican men are just goddamn terrified of a woman's vagina. Terrified of her sexuality. Terrified of her refusal to do what the book of Leviticus instructs her to do. Now, the other night I asked where were the women? Apparently, there were a lot of women outside the state house in Virginia standing in silence as a show of force. Now, I read that somewhere. You don't see that on the nightly news. No, well, nightly news isn't going to piss anybody off in the corporate world. Have you seen any reports of this? Seriously, now, on CBS, ABC, or NBC? Maybe there have been. I haven't seen them. Of course, that doesn't mean they weren't there. But this transvaginal probe, I mean, isn't that what people who are abducted by aliens say? Oh, yeah, they stuck this thing up inside of me, and I don't know, I haven't been right since. Not that I was right before, but, oh, my God. Where did they put it, sir? Well, you know, there. Ooh. And you, ma'am? Yeah, they put it there. To me, too. I don't know. Isn't that what we always hear of these probes? Well, of course we do. They probed up inside of me. Hence, ergo, i.e., the Republican right-wing males who populate the House of Delegates in Virginia are aliens! And what do we do with aliens? We deport them. I frankly think that these kind of aliens should be terminated with extreme prejudice. I mean, after all, they're aliens. They don't belong here. They have their probes. They're probing. They're sticking things or wanting to stick things in us. What's next? What comes after this? What kind of religious right-wing horror comes after this?
substance, no abuse.
Past the hour. All right, let's get to the nitty-gritty here. I have a steady listener who's been extremely loyal to this program over the years from Florida. It's Diane in Florida. This is what she writes. I'm a retired zoologist paleontologist. I've spent my entire life contemplating the nature of life. The recent political uproar over contraception and abortion, a debate I've listened to off and on for over 50 years, prompts me to speak up and share my thoughts with you. Often when a debate can't settle a matter, it's because the wrong question is being asked. And that is the case here, at least with regard to part of the debate. The question is not when life begins, it's when personhood begins. Life comes from life. Sperm are alive. Eggs are alive. The zygote can only be formed from a sperm and an egg that are already alive. Life is not created at conception. It is passed on at conception. We are all part of a continuum of living creatures passing on life that began some 3 billion years ago and has continued without a break to become literally embodied in you. So biologically, it's nonsense to speak of when life begins. It was already there. When a human female infant is born, the eggs in her ovaries that will mature in adulthood are already there, alive and ready to pass life on yet again. So what are we talking about here? We are talking about legal personhood. Spiritual or religious definitions of personhood are not the provenance of the government, either at the beginning or ending of life. The government is limited to a practical definition of life that recognizes independent viability at the beginning of life and the degree of intellectual awareness at the end of life. Government is unable to determine and has no business attempting to determine when or if someone acquires a soul. So please, let's drop the red herring debate over when life begins. Instead, let's accept, first, that we are each free to define spiritual personhood for ourselves, but not others, and focus on what defines legal personhood. Not that legal personhood is a simple question, but that we need to not complicate the matter with the debate over when life begins. All the cells involved in the process are both alive and human at all stages. There is no more biological reason to treat the zygote as a legal person than it is to grant personhood to spilled sperm. Sperm, eggs, zygote, embryo, and fetus are all living human cells at all stages in the development of a new person. The most biologically significant event in the development of a new person is birth. When the infant ceases to receive blood flow from its mother, leaves the womb, and takes its first breath, and the independent life of the new person begins. Diana in Florida. You know, I'm sitting here after I got this from Diana this morning. I'm sitting here reading this morning. I'm thinking, damn, why didn't it ever occur to me that simple a mathematical progression, which to me is what she's got here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Step by step, this is how it works. Instead of that, you know, I, like most people in this country, have been so sidetracked by this ridiculous, half-assed screaming about when life begins, implantation, no, fertilization, no, something else. And it just never occurred to me. It's all alive. So what we're talking about, as Diana points out, is personhood. I think I've mentioned it before, just obliquely and never really understanding what I was saying.
It's when the fetus ceases to be a parasite and becomes an individual.
Wah, wah.
Breathing, all of a sudden, breathing person. Isn't it true sometimes that the most simple truths are the ones that we so easily overlook? But as Diana said at the beginning of this, often when a debate can't settle a matter, it's because the wrong question is being asked. Thank you very much, Diana in Florida.
Because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
25 before the hour. Now, I want to mention a little bit more elaborately than I normally do. Our sponsor this first hour is Margot Pays. She's known for her work covering the Occupy movement in Los Angeles. She also is on the cutting edge of what eventually is going to be, it may not be next year, it may not be 5 years from now, but it's coming. She's on the cutting edge of what eventually will be the primary news disseminating system in the United States, and that will be the web, web-based internet. She has a program now. It's at the website Inside Out News. You can get there by going to ioutnews.org. Now, she's got a new program, a full-hour program. She's expanding her current news report to a full hour, and it's starting tomorrow at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. The show will be streaming live on the internet at ioutnews.org. Margot is our sponsor tonight, and we appreciate it, Margot, very much. And the last line in her message, hope to see you there. I'll be running your program while I'm trying to do the last hour of mine, but by God, we'll do it. We'll do it. Congratulations, Margot. Thanks for your support. And we will try to, we need to put a link up at our website on this one, Kathy. So Margot Pays is the sponsor for this hour. Inside Out News, premiering on Thursday, tomorrow, at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern. The show will be streaming live at iOutNews. That's the letter I, outnews.org. Be there or be square. All right? And thanks for the sponsorship. Oh, I already said that, didn't I? I did. Okay. From Cindy mailed this to me. I'm not sure where it comes from, but that's all right. A group of female Democratic legislators in the Georgia House, right here in Hicksville, has proposed a bill that would ban men from seeking vasectomies. The author of this bill is one Yasmin Neal. She said in a statement, quote, thousands of children are deprived of birth in the state of Georgia every year because of the lack of state regulation over vasectomies. It is patently unfair that men can avoid unwanted fatherhood by presuming that their judgment over such matters is more valid than the judgment of the General Assembly. How dare men think that? While women's ability to decide is constantly up for debate throughout the United States. End quote. Now, the legislation, for real, the legislation is House Bill 954, a bill sponsored, the bill that Representative Neal is sponsoring is in response to HB 954. That's a bill sponsored by one of these right-wing bastards, Doug McKillops, that seeks to ban abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. Current legislation prohibits abortions after the second trimester or approximately 24 weeks. The measure, which has been moving quickly through the House, is intended to prevent late-term abortions on fetuses, or proponents say, can already feel pain at 20 weeks. The Georgia House was scheduled to take up HB 954 today. In response, Democrats scheduled a 3 p.m. hearing this afternoon, which is now long past, to introduce the vasectomy ban. House Minority Leader Stacey Abrams, in a statement, said, quote, the Republican attack on women's reproductive rights is unconscionable. What is more deplorable is the hypocrisy of HB 954's author. If we follow his logic, we believe it is the obligation of the General Assembly to assert an equally invasive interest in the reproductive habits of men and substitute the will of the government over the will of men. Now, this freak McKillops, who's the author of HB 954, was amused by the Democrats' proposal. He said,
I think it's disappointing that they would make light of something as important as protecting life. It's just not a jokey matter, and it's time for serious issues and serious discussions. End quote.
So in other words, the punk is saying,
the woman, what's her name? Yasmin Neal. The woman who introduced this bill in as a counter move against mine makes sense. Women ain't got no right to have the privacy around their uteruses and things, you know, the women parts up on their lady parts. I don't like to talk about it because I get all embarrassed. But we have to make the decisions for women. As far as a vasectomy, it ain't none of their darn business. Just ain't none of their darn business. So there. Now, I think it's pretty crappy that Yasmin Neal, what kind of name is Yasmin? That sounds like a Muslim name to me. I don't know what's wrong with some of these women. Jesus, God, help me. You don't believe in me. Oh, that's right. Never mind.
I got a rather lengthy one here from Bridget, too. I guess I'm going to have to let this... I'll give it a shot here. I think I got enough time to get this in. No, I don't. Next hour. A victory of sorts. No, it's a clear victory for us, secularists. And this one is in Rhode Island. Remember I told you the story? Cranston West High School. There was a banner there, a prayer banner that had been there since God was a teenager or something. And Jessica Alquist, a student there, decided, hey, wait a minute. Don't think so. And so she has to have it taken down and, you know, got the ACLU to back her in Cranston, Rhode Island. Next thing you know, she's getting death threats and all the good Christians are coming out of the sewer, with their pitchforks and burning torches, trying to find a stake to tie this young woman to and burn her because obviously she's a witch. Well, guess what? A public school district committee voted not to appeal a federal court decision ordering the removal of the prayer banner displayed at Cranston West High School auditorium. The vote came actually a couple of nights ago after hours of heated debate and months of controversy. The Cranston School Committee voted 5-2 not to appeal U.S. District Court Judge Ronald Legault's order to remove the prayer banner. Just take it down! The high school student behind the battle to remove this unconstitutional piece of religious dogma has been, Jessica Alquist has been the public face behind this. She's a student at Cranston, faced prejudice, adversity, religious intolerance from Christian extremists. And the prayer banner episode, according to what I have here, brought out the worst in many residents of Cranston and what some found to be an open display of religious bigotry. Remember, Rhode Island State Representative Peter Palumbo, referred to Jessica Alquist as an evil little thing. You're just an evil, dirty little thing, aren't you? Huh? With your dirty pillows on your chest and God knows what you've got below your belt. You're just an evil little thing, aren't you? You little... Jesus doesn't like you now. In addition to calling Alquist an evil little thing, Palumbo also made the claim that she's being coerced by evil people. Atheists and other secular Americans. Evil, evil. Why don't you wear a looser sweater so your dirty pillows don't show so much? Ooh, you evil little thing. If I had my way, I'd take you to my office and discipline you.
The hostility and threats directed toward this young woman were so intense that at times the 16-year-old required a police escort. In addition, four different florists in the Cranston area refused to deliver flowers to Jessica. At least one florist claimed to be frightened of the potential backlash from Christians who didn't want young Jessica to receive any flowers.
You evil little thing. You are evil. You're just an evil female. I bet you work for Planned Parenthood. I bet you're a Girl Scout. You evil thing. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
Oh. What madness, huh? Okay, I want to mention this again. For those of you who are familiar with Margot Pays in the L.A. area, I don't have to tell you who she is, but she's known for her work covering the Occupy movement in that city. She is expanding her news reports into a full-hour program. Insight Out News is premiering tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. The show will be streaming live to the internet at ioutnews.org. ioutnews.org. Margot, good wishes for the program. Thank you for the sponsorship here. And I would fully expect that there are going to be at least 37 people, that is the listeners to this program, who will tune in tomorrow. Don't tune me out. Just have her up on your screen and be listening to K-Talk. Or however you want to do that. I mean, I do that with Rachel. Right now, Rachel Maddow is on in the background here. And so you can parallel process. Let me share something with you. This was sent to me. Dear National Jewish Democratic Council supporter, before the remaining Republican presidential candidate debate again tonight, we wanted to share with you some key facts you may not know about former Senator Rick Santorum, the candidate who is leading the pack in key states and national polls as well. Below are 10 things every American Jew should know about Santorum. 1. Santorum offensively compared what's at stake in his campaign against President Barack Obama to the threats posed by Nazi Germany during World War II. In fact, he does this all the time. 2. Santorum believes, quote, "We always need a Jesus candidate," end quote, on the ballot. His campaign sent out Hanukkah cards that contained a verse from Christian scripture. 3. Santorum prides himself on being the most extreme anti-choice candidate in the Republican field and has even invoked the Holocaust to attack Planned Parenthood. 4. Santorum claimed that an important part of pregnancy care covered by the Affordable Care Act, prenatal screening, is a means to cull the ranks of the disabled in our society by promoting abortion. 5. Santorum has a history of disparaging public education and even claimed that the system is anachronistic. He declared on the campaign trail that preschool is a scheme to, quote, indoctrinate your children, end quote. 6. While opposing the Affordable Care Act has become dogma within the Republican Party, Santorum has outflanked even his own party by floating a pay-as-you-go system for health insurance. 7. Despite his personal support for Israel, Santorum followed other Republican presidential candidates in legitimizing the anti-Israel Representative Ron Paul by declaring he would, quote, absolutely, end quote, vote for Paul if Paul were the GOP's nominee. 8. In direct contrast to mainstream American Jewry, which finds inspiration for protecting the environment in the Torah, Santorum uses the Bible to rail against environmental protection. He denies humanity's role in climate change, calling it, quote, patently absurd, end quote, and believes it to be a political conspiracy. 9, Santorum willfully disregarded the truth that more than half of all women between the ages of 18 and 34 struggle to afford contraception, and justified his opposition to insurance-covered birth control by claiming that the cost of contraception is, quote, minor, and something that costs just a few dollars, end quote. 10. Santorum vehemently opposes marriage equality and argues against equal rights for gays and lesbian Americans. In addition to comparing his fight against it to President Abraham Lincoln freeing the slaves, he has called for, his word, invalidating existing same-sex marriages, and even told a gay soldier that he would reinstate the discriminatory don't ask, don't tell policy. Additionally, Santorum has repeatedly engaged in offensive anti-gay rhetoric. Thank you very much, David Harris, President and CEO. So, the religious strife kicked up by these fanatical, sick Protestants or Catholics or Christians just continues. It continues. And don't you know, do you feel this? You get this feeling? I had the weirdest feeling today. I tried to explain it to Kathy. I don't think I did a very good job. I think I just scared her. But, I get this feeling that death is hovering. Kind of like the death that I've seen referred to in historical novels about pre-World War I. Right before the various royal families in Europe decided to commit fratricide. And as a result, 50 million people died. And as a result of that, another 20 or 30 million died from the so-called Spanish flu immediately after World War I. But the specter of death. And, you know, if I'm going to personify it, it would be like the cartoon drawing. Kind of like one of those characters in Lord of the Rings with the scythe and the horse. Something, it smells like religious death, like the major religions of the earth are gearing up to begin the slaughter. Do you ever get that? I don't know. It was kind of a fleeting thought, feeling, death, kind of like one of the four horsemen broke away and decided to come here and take a look. Creepy feeling. And a half past the hour. It's the Malloy program. All right, from Bridget at fairywoodland.com. Have you been to their website, fairywoodland.com? Man, don't go there stoned. This is what this is what Bridget writes. This is all regarding this crazed, twisted religion crap that people like Santorum. I mean, Santorum is the Jesus candidate, only the Jesus he follows is, I don't know, probably the Jesus out of Mel Gibson's twisted psyche. But, you know, this is supposed to be the political arena. And every time Santorum opens his mouth, bats fly out. And they all say the same thing. Jesus loves you! But he'll kill you if you don't do what I tell you you gotta do. You know, that kind of garbage. Bridget writes, there is no way to have a conversation with people who are operating from a false reality. They want to believe this crap because it supports their worldview. No amount of real facts will change their positions because the facts will undermine their beliefs, and their beliefs are the foundation of their lives. This is what religion, no matter what kind, does to people's minds. And I'm talking about religion here, not spirituality. We can have a talk about the distinction sometime, but I think you know the difference. If the foundation of your life rests on a belief in the physical reality of a myth, you know, talking snakes, burning bushes, an actual white bearded guy in the sky, and so on and so forth, then you've rejected rational thought as a primary process. Once you've made that leap, that cognitive process gets applied to every part of your life. In other words, what you believe is the foundational truth against which you compare all other information. If you believe the Bible is the inerrant word of God, and it says that God created the world in 7 days, including current versions of Homo sapiens, then no amount of scientific evidence can ever convince you that the age of the earth or of evolution. Because to accept the science would destroy your foundation. The popular statement, you're entitled to your own beliefs, but not your own facts, has no meaning for someone whose neural pathways have been rotted like this, because their beliefs are their facts.
You can scientifically date human teeth in, found in a cave in Israel to 400,000 years ago, but not impact the belief that humans and the planet were created about 8,000 years ago. You can put Barack Obama's birth certificate on coffee cups and T-shirts, as the Obama campaign has brilliantly done, and they'll still tell you Obama was born in Kenya because that's what they believe. Religion, especially fundamentalist religion of any kind, rots your brain. It requires you to base your capacity for rational thought on a belief system, and that's quicksand. Our psyches can't navigate that kind of paradox, so once caught in it, we can't see the fact of a rope being tossed to us as anything but a threat. Boy, is that the truth. I just want to reiterate here that I am not referencing spirituality. I think coming to a sense that there is some consciousness beyond ourselves that we feel connected to and even ritualize, and even ritualizing the observance of that in some way is a different process. When I do that, I know that I've taken a leap of faith and that it's a personal choice. I don't insist on it as an inerrant fact that everyone else must be brought to follow. I wish I knew what to do about this problem, Mike. It feels like a war, which those of us on this side didn't start, but are increasingly pulled into. I'm perfectly happy to let people believe whatever they want to, but when those beliefs become weapons aimed at my body or my friends' relationships, my government, my planet, I can't sit quiet and let those weapons blow everything up. Oh, wait. Blowing it all up is what they want, isn't it? They want Armageddon. That's one of those facts from the quicksand pit. Well, not if I can help it. I've stopped trying to argue with them. I just keep finding as many people with still functioning brains as I can and get together and say, no, we're not going to do it this way. We're going to make laws and policy based on the Constitution, not on your belief system, period. End of discussion. So far, it's working on a local basis, but it's a lot of work. I just want to encourage everyone who is as disgusted as I am by the war being waged by religion on all of us to just say no. Say it with your body, because that's what it's about. Say no by standing in front of the Capitol building in Virginia like the 1,000-plus people did in response to the vaginal probe legislation. Stand with black boots and flowers like Jude and Women Standing have been doing for years to comment on our wars. Stand in your city council or school board meetings. Stand on street corners with signs. Sit down in legislators' offices. Grab 10 friends or stand alone. But stand against this insanity! Then maybe we can get on to standing for something again. Bridget. Now, the Jew she's referring to and Women Standing, it's an organization in Seattle, a peace organization, womenstanding.org. And Jude is their spiritual center. So if you want to check out that website, go ahead. What Jude does is she stands in silence with a pair of used combat boots, and inside the boots poking out are a couple of long-stemmed white flowers. I first met Jude about 6 years ago in Seattle when she and some of her women companions presented about five of us, this is back when I was still a liberal, five of us liberal talk show hosts with flowers in recognition of our efforts. And of course, since then, I've left liberal and have become nothing but a frothing, screaming left winger. But Jude still emails me, so I must be doing okay. Thus spake Bridget, who is one of our two. Bob Alexander is the other one. Bridget Wolf is one of our two ethics advisors. And I'm not sure what that means. I just felt years ago when they were given that assignment, Bob and Bridget,
that they were the appropriate two. I always figured if I crossed some line, they would, one or both would let me know, and then I could come on the air and start backpedaling and apologizing. But so far, nothing. Have you ever got an email, Kathy, from Jude or Bob saying, you crossed the line? Of course, they're both as crazy as I am, so it was a very, very adroit selection on my part to pick them. all right. Do we have a break coming in a moment? Okay, then no point in getting things started. The last big deal that I have here tonight is from Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2. You know what Obama did today? He made the announcement today. Obama has decided to propose legislation. You know, he can only propose. The legislature has to dispose. But he's proposing legislation to cut the tax rate on corporations from 35 to 28%. Now, what's going to be fun is to watch these twisted, filthy, rotten right-wingers fight against this. Now, whether you agree with that or not, I don't. I believe the rate of the tax rate on corporate profits should be around 60%, frankly. And that's not confiscatory. They can handle it. The bastards have gotten such a free ride for how many years now? You know, capitalism doesn't like taxes. They don't like to pay their way.
Tell the people liberty must go. There's more to gain in war than peace. Let the weapons flow. Destabilize the Middle East. Enrich the CEO. Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison.
For Radical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. It is church night, so I've got to drop this in. It's just going to piss everybody off who is still believes in Christianity or Catholicism and Lutheranism or whatever and follows this program. Today was Ash Wednesday. Now, according to Western-style Christianity, this is the first day of Lent, and it occurs 46 days before Easter, and it is a movable feast. It falls on a different date each year because it is dependent on the date of Easter, which is also a movable feast because that has to do with, oh, my God, phases of the moon? No! Yes. According to the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Jesus, the rabbi, spent 40 days fasting in the desert before he began his public ministry, which is very short-lived, as you all know. Now, when he was in the desert fasting, he was tempted by Satan. I think that was the burning bush story, wasn't it? So Ash Wednesday marks the beginning of this 40-day liturgical period of prayer and fasting. The only problem here is that I have yet to see in my entire lifetime a Christian of any stripe who actually fasts for 40 days after going through that little ash thing with his local parish priest. Now, the practice of placing ashes on the foreheads of believers as a sign of mourning and repentance to God. Are you kidding me? Mourning? How about, I have an idea. Maybe all the churches that practice this could go out to wherever the huge receptacle is that contains the ashes of people's dreams, the ashes of foreclosed houses, the ashes of jobs taken away from them, the ashes of people losing health insurance, all those ashes. Instead of some phony ass, I mean, what do they use, a burnt cork? Ooh, boy, that's real intense, isn't it? Or as Leonard Cohen says, the ashes of the gay. You know that line? From Democracy is Coming to the USA. Remember that line? Now, in keeping with this hypocritical moment, the Nazi Pope rode on a motorized cart in an Ash Wednesday procession in Roma, forsaking the traditional short walk between two Rome churches because the 84-year-old pontiff tries to conserve his energy. There's an awful lot of priestly sexual child rape that still has to be covered up. Right, Benedict? The Pope wore an ermine-trimmed crimson cape to protect him from the chilly evening air as he stood in the cart during the brief procession. An ermine-trimmed crimson cape. Oh, wouldn't Jesus be proud of that? Wouldn't Jesus walk up to him? Of course, at that point, his guards would put a bullet right through Jesus's sacrosanct head, and then Jesus could say, ha ha, can't kill me, it's been tried, at which point the Pope would fall over in a swoon. But wouldn't Jesus walk up to him and say, Mr. Pope, ermine? Really? So the poverty thing that I told you about, and taking care of the least of these that I told you about, not so much, eh? Ermine. Who's your tailor? Hugo Boss? After he got out of the cart, Benedict walked briskly and unassisted into and out of the basilica, where he led a solemn service to mark the start of the Lenten season of penitence. He wore purple-colored vestments as he celebrated Mass in the ancient basilica. Hamana, 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 hamana. And then he rubbed ashes on the foreheads of some of the faithful as they approached him one by one after being wanded and passing through metal detectors. I don't know. I just, like I said, if you want to do this right, if you want to do it the way Jesus would have done it, go to some homeless encampment where there are ashes on the ground where mothers and children and fathers tried to fix dinner last night. You know, burning pieces of house debris, and take those ashes and put them on your forehead.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
What happened to the music? 25 before the hour. All right, it is time for our nightly dose of economic reality from Prairie 2, a.k.a. Bruce Enberg. The subject line, on this site, Americans suffered and died. What does he mean by that? He writes, all across America, Republicans are dancing in the streets. President Obama has finally come round to embrace Reaganomics. The president is proposing legislation that will slash the highest corporate tax rate in the world from 35% down to 28%. Wait, the Republicans don't seem to be dancing. They're just tearing at their clothing, gnashing their teeth, and attacking small animals. Oh no! That Chihuahua has turned on them, and he has one of them down! The other Republicans are running, just running away, the humanity. Why are the Republicans upset over a major tax cut for business? The cut is real, but would only favor small and medium businesses who actually pay the 35% rate. Big businesses that keep Republicans in seven-figure salaries when they leave Congress won't benefit. Not only that, but they will actually have to start paying taxes for a change. And you know their servants on Capitol Hill will feel the sting of the lash if this passes.
Oh.
The smaller corporations that are already starting to bring jobs back from China will also get an additional tax cut in addition to the 7% cut just for doing their patriotic duty. The non-patriotic transnational corporations will pay for it. Not only will numerous tax loopholes and corporate welfare giveaways be ended, but they will no longer be able to keep their profits overseas to avoid taxes. The most profitable corporations that make trillions will have to start paying taxes like they, well, like they make trillions. There's a note here from the typing monkeys. Prairie 2 is rolling on the floor. Send help. Oh, he's back up at the typewriter. The Republican typewriter? Keyboard. The Republican talking points on this are that Obama isn't making this a priority, so it won't pass. It's his fault that the Republican-controlled House that must, according to the Constitution, originate a bill of this nature. The Republican-controlled House just can't do its job. They also say it won't help the economy because it's revenue neutral. Just as much tax will be collected, so it won't do anything positive. The Bush budget plan that we're still living with requires that 40% of the expenditures be paid for with borrowing. But Republicans still want to cut revenue. In fact, the Obama plan would be a boon for the U.S. economy because it puts money in the hands of the kind of businessman who would actually, or woman, who would actually create jobs. But more importantly, it would take away some of the advantages the big transnational companies have that destroy the kind of businesses this plan would help. Is this Obama plan really enough? No, not by a long shot, but it's a start. To really bring back America, you need to undo every piece of legislation and government regulation the Republicans have pushed through Congress since the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947. Passed over the veto of Harry Truman, that act created the right to work for less states. The Do-Nothing Congress of 1947 also changed the name of Boulder Dam back to Hoover Dam. This blight on America should be righted as well, along with the placing of a granite marker at the site of every Hooverville that can be identified. And the granite marker should say, Americans died here. We can have America back again once Americans realize where it went. Ooh, Prairie 2. You can visit him at prairie2.com or tvnewslies.org. It's your choice. See, when you go to tvnewslies.org, you get the version of Prairie 2's work that is exactly the same as here, except the typos have been taken care of, and the punctuation and the run-on sentences and, you know, have all been taken care of by Reg over at tvnewslies.org. So it's your choice. You can do what you want. I don't really give a damn. And then there's this. I just couldn't resist this one. So this is from space.com. It's a great website, by the way, space.com. A new planet has been found by NASA's Hubble telescope, and it's the first super Earth, so-called water world. Did you see about that? Read about this? This is up at space.com yesterday. Scientists have discovered a new type of alien planet, a steamy water world that is larger than Earth but smaller than Uranus. The standard bearer for this new class of exoplanet is called GJ1214b. New observations by NASA's Hubble Space Telescope suggest that this planet is a watery world enshrouded by a thick, steamy atmosphere. The lead author of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, Mass., said, "This is like no planet we know of. A huge fraction of its mass is made up of water." Well, wait a second. In Genesis, doesn't it say something about water and the firmament and To date, space.com reports astronomers have discovered more than 700 planets beyond our solar system, with about 2,300 more so-called candidates awaiting confirmation by follow-up observation. These alien planets are a diverse bunch. Astronomers have found one planet as light and airy as styrofoam, and another as dense as iron. They've discovered several alien worlds that orbit two suns, like Luke Skywalker's home planet of Tatooine in the Star Wars films. But this planet, this one we're talking about here, this water world, is located just 40 light years from Earth in the constellation Ophiuchus, which is the serpent bearer. And it's something new altogether. This so-called super-Earth is about 2.7 times Earth's diameter and weighs nearly 7 times as much as our home planet. How do they do that? It orbits a red dwarf star at a distance of 1.2 million miles, giving it an estimated surface temperature of 446 degrees Fahrenheit, too hot to host life as we know it. I don't know, this kind of stuff. There's a time in my life where, you know, something like this, I would have tripped out on a story like this. I would have just got on space.com and stayed there for a month until everything about this planet was revealed. Now, there's a new telescope that is to be launched, the James Webb Space Telescope. It's going to be launched in about 6 years, and they're going to send it to this planet to take a close-up look. You know what they're going to find there? They're going to find creatures not totally unlike the Loch Ness Monster and this thing that crawls around in Iceland, in the fjords in Iceland. You know they're going to find that, right? And I'm just wondering, what happens then to the book of Genesis? Do the people who believe in that book, the three religions of the book, do they rewrite it, or do they figure out a way that Allah, or not Allah, but Muhammad or Jesus or Moses went there too? I mean, the Mormons figured out how to bring, you know, their heavenly kingdom to the United States. They just said, well, one of the lost tribes of Israel came here, you know, in boats and stuff. And the angel Moron, I'm sorry, I always say that, the angel Moroni eventually, you know, revealed everything to Joseph Smith. But so this might be ancient spaceships. This is the stuff that, what's his name, Van Doniken has been talking about for a long time. These are those little space things you see on the walls of Egyptian tombs. If you've ever seen the walls of Egyptian tombs, I don't know. You know, I see it on National Geographic, but, you know, and they have these little spaceships. Hieroglyphics, you know, 3,000-year-old hieroglyphics, 4,000, and they're spaceships. Well, there you go. Just thought I'd throw this in since it is church night, and this is remotely connected to. But seriously, I've always wondered what is going to happen when life on a different heavenly body, so to speak, is discovered. What's going to happen? Will it mean anything to the Christians, Jews, and Muslims? Will it mean anything? They all subscribe to the same creation myth. Will it mean anything? Especially the Protestants, they're going to have a hard time with this. The inerrancy of their Bible. That must be a chapter that they forgot to include. You know, the one about planet XOJ61394, Waterworld. I bet they have a lot of questions. Maybe some suggestions. And I bet they're gonna ask me about man's insanity. You got a real nice planet here, but you better watch your atmosphere. And you better clean your waters up, or have none for your cup. You got a real nice planet here, real nice planet. But you better watch your atmosphere. Real nice planet. And you better clean your waters up, real pretty planet. Or have none for your cup. Clean me up, I wanna be abducted tonight.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Okay. 10 before the hour. The news. Remember Fukushima, Japan? Anybody remember that? That was just so last year, wasn't it? Fukushima. The Associated Press is reporting that radiation has now been detected 400 miles off the Japanese coast in the Pacific, with water showing readings, according to this, of up to 1,000 times more than prior levels. It was reported by scientists yesterday. But those results for the substance cesium-137 are far below the levels that are generally considered harmful, either to marine animals or people who eat seafood. The results are for water samples taken in June. In addition to thousands of water samples, researchers also sampled fish and plankton and found cesium-137 levels well below the legal health limit. Don't worry, not to worry, not to worry. Scientists at this meeting in Salt Lake City, the annual Ocean Sciences meeting, said, quote, we're not over the hump yet in terms of radioactive contamination of the ocean because of continued leakage from the plant. The he was on the ship that collected water samples. They collected water from about 20 miles to about 400 miles off the coast of Fukushima. Concentrations of cesium-137 throughout that range were 10 to 1,000 times above normal, but they were about a tenth the levels generally considered harmful, the scientists said. So, everything's okay. Cesium-137, however, wasn't the only radioactive substance released from the nuclear plant. But apparently that one is a particular concern because of its long persistence in the environment. Its half-life is like, you know, 30 years. Well, I know things that are longer than that that are radioactive. Oh, well, 30 years. Most of the cesium-137 detected during the scientific voyage probably entered the ocean from water discharges rather than atmospheric fallout, the scientists said. So, the scientists said that this is actually good news. However, we still don't have a full picture. Well, you know, I'm just absolutely thrilled that cesium-137 readings of up to 1,000 times higher than prior levels is still just a tenth of what the human body can, it doesn't say tolerate. I'm just assuming they're talking about tolerating. I don't know. I'm glad the scientists are just relieved and happy and high-fiving each other. And, because it kind of still makes me a little bit nervous to read stuff like that. Doesn't it you? Well, the only reason it makes me nervous is because I am not a nuclear scientist, or I'm not oriented toward that type of knowledge or understanding. I just, you know, whenever I hear the words cesium-137 and the word environment, I don't know. I just get a little nervous. I still do. I guess it's my childhood. You know, when we used to have to do the duck and cover drills, and I know. They always said, "Oh, not to worry. All you have to do is get underneath a tree, and you'll be okay," or "get under your desk." Oh my God, get under your desk, kids! When the school collapses around you, don't worry. Your sturdy desk there will keep everything from falling down and crushing your little not yet formed body. And then when the blast is over, why heck? A good stiff wind brought about by the force of the blast will just blow all the radiation away. Won't bother you at all. So, you know, I was brought up with that, as not a few of the listeners to this program were brought up with the same kind of duck and cover drills. No, don't anyone sing it. And Ertl the Turtle, was it Ertl? Yeah, Ertl the Turtle. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, you talk about a warped childhood. How do you grow up and retain any sanity or sense of purpose or belief in God when you grow up knowing that any second the entire planet could be annihilated? Kind of like Elie Wiesel in his book Night, when he watched the burning pits in the death camps that had just been loaded up with Jewish children and set afire. And it was at that point that Elie Wiesel, at least then, I think he was a teenager, he came to the absolute and utter insight that there was no God. Well, we're going to take a break and come back for the final. I didn't mean to run that one on you there at the last minute. You thought I was going to go someplace and I'd do the death camp image. Sorry. We'll be back momentarily, give you about 6 or 7 minutes to get that image out of your head. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. glad you stuck around for hour three of the Molloy program. Okay, something that we I think we had on the show a couple several months ago, but I want to pop it in here again. And somebody emailed this to me. I'm not sure where it comes from, but it's salient. It is appropriate to the situation that we're facing in this country politically. It is by no means an apologia for Barack Obama. Not at all. Some of Barack Obama's policies where concerned civil liberties and foreign relations are, if not worse than, certainly equally as corrupt and anti-democratic as Bush's. So this is, you have to keep this in the proper context. But this is directed, I should say, at you right-wingers. You people who think you're conservatives, but you're not. You are right-wingers. And you should be ashamed of yourselves. You really should. You should just be utterly ashamed of yourselves. But of course, that's an impossibility because you know why? God is on your side, right? Okay. So, this thing says since Obama's regime, all of a sudden, folks have gotten mad and want to take America back. Back to what? Back to where? Bob Alexander talked about this last night. I thought my grandfather was dead. After 8 years of the Bush-Cheney disaster, now you get mad? You didn't get mad when the Supreme Court stopped a legal recount and appointed a president. You didn't get mad when Cheney allowed energy company officials to dictate energy policy and push us to invade Iraq. You didn't get mad when the Bush crime family outed a CIA operative and almost cost her her life. And of course, you didn't get the least bit mad when the USA Patriot Act got passed, did you? You lumps of coal. You didn't get mad when we illegally invaded and occupied a country that posed no threat to us. You didn't get angry when we spent and are continuing to spend what will finally top out at around $2 trillion on that illegal invasion and occupation. You didn't get mad then. Not a peep from you right-wing bastards. Not a sound. You didn't get mad when Bush borrowed more money from foreign sources than the previous 42 presidents, that would be all of them, combined. Where were you then, you rat bastards? Huh? Didn't hear a peep from you. You didn't get angry when over $10 billion in cash just disappeared in Iraq. Remember that little story? You right-wingers don't remember it. You have the attention span of a 2-year-old. You didn't get mad when you found out we were torturing people. In fact, some of you sons of bitches celebrated it. You didn't get mad when Bush embraced trade and outsourcing policies that shipped 6 million American jobs out of the country. You didn't say a word, did you? You right-wing toadstools. You didn't get mad when it was discovered that the Bush crime family was illegally wiretapping Americans. All Americans. And not just wiretapping, but looking at everything. Where were you then, you punks? Oh, you didn't get mad when the Bush crime family just somehow couldn't seem to catch bin Laden, you know, the mass killer of, how do you folks put it, 3,000 Americans, which is not true, but facts never were that important to you right-wingers. You didn't get mad when George W. Bush rang up $10 trillion in combined budget and current account deficits. Not a sound. Where were you? Where were you, punks? Oh, that's right. The Tea Party hadn't all of a sudden popped out of the nearest dump heap. You didn't have the Tea Party to tell you this stuff, did you? You didn't get mad when you saw the horrible conditions at Walter Reed Army Hospital. What do you care? None of you right-wingers serve in the military anyway. You didn't get mad when the Bush crime family let a major U.S. city, New Orleans, drown. And you know why you didn't? Because, oh, look here, Maude. Look at all those Negroes. Oh, that'll teach those sons of bitches. That's just a cesspool of sin and corruption anyway. Their damn Mardi Gras parade. Pugh. Huh? You didn't get mad when we gave people who had money more than they could spend, the filthy rich, over $1 trillion in tax breaks. Not a peep. Why? Because someday you're going to be a billionaire too, right? Right? Yeah, you're going to be a billionaire. Yes, you are. You're going to invent something, right? You didn't even finish high school, but you're going to invent something. Oh, yeah, you got this in your garage. Yeah, okay. You didn't get mad when the Bush crime family resulted in the worst 8 years of job creation in decades. Not a sound from you slugs. You didn't get mad when over 200,000 U.S. citizens over the course of 8 years died because they had no health insurance. Let them die! Isn't that what you all scream out? Let them die! No health insurance? I don't give a goddamn. Let them die. You didn't get mad when a deliberate lack of oversight and regulations from the Bush administration caused your fellow citizens to lose $12 trillion in investments and retirement home values. You sons of bitches just sat back on your hindquarters and didn't say a word, did you? But you finally got mad. Yes, you did. You got very pissed off when a black man was elected president and decided in his way, as sloppy and inefficient as it was and is, the people in America deserve the right to see a doctor if they get sick. Yeah, you got real pissed off. All of a sudden, there's this young black man in the White House. What, Maude? It's the White House, not the Black House. What the hell's going on here? So those 8 years of lies and corruption and torture and job losses by the millions and stealing your tax dollars to make the rich richer and the worst economic disaster since 1929 are okay with you. But a black man in the White House? What? Oh, hell no. So now you're mad. You know, you people, you right-wingers define yourself 24/7. You are constantly defining the lack of courage, moral character, integrity, decency, self-respect, respect for your fellow humans. Every time you open your mouths, every time you gather in a clustery, messy group to cheer and rant about some freak like Santorum or some moron like Palin, you just continue to reveal yourselves, don't you? On and on and on and on. Let me tell you something, you right-wing trolls. The rest of us understand you and know who you are. And you make normal people sick.
Backslapping haters of hippies like me. Tree-hugging, peace-loving, pot-smoking, porn-watching, lazy-ass hippies like me. Tree-hugging, love-making, pro-choice and gay-wedding, widespread-digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jails by conservative Christian, right wing Republican, straight white American males. Diamonds.
The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
No. 21 past the hour. Now, you know, what's that saying? Even a stop clock is right twice a day. The metaphor indicating that even someone you thoroughly disagree with, politically speaking, occasionally can say something that makes sense. Bob Barr, who was the U.S. attorney for Northern Georgia until he ran for Congress, was about as right-wing as they could get. But there were a couple of issues that, you know, I just had to clench my fists and grit my teeth and say, yes, I agree with him on that one, you know, about civil liberties. It's difficult sometimes to do, but if you are attempting to be, as I attempt to be, I don't very seldom make it, I don't think, but if you're attempting to be politically honest with yourself, which is the only person with whom you have to be, then eventually you come to that realization that a stop clock is right at least twice a day. Enter Ron Paul. He was in Kansas City, I think. Yeah, Kansas City, Missouri. Or as they say, Missouri. Kansas City, Missouri. He was giving a speech last Saturday night. And a short distance away was an establishment Republican Party banquet. A banquet of fat cat Republicans. All white, all lots of money. Banquets they were having. And Ron Paul was up the street at the Kansas City's Union Station. According to the Associated Press, as the party's establishment dined on steaks and stuff across the street at the Missouri Republican Party's annual conference. Now, Kansas Republicans were holding a similar convention in a suburb right across the state line. If you've ever been to Kansas City, you know how damn confusing it can be, right? But anyway, Ron Paul drew a couple thousand standing and chanting people to his rally. And he said, here it comes, that the United States, quote, is slipping into a fascist system dominated by government and businesses. Ooh! Yeah, you're right. Ron Paul asserted the U.S. got off track about 100 years ago. Uh-huh. During the era of President Woodrow Wilson, who led the nation through World War I, if you can call that leadership, and unsuccessfully advocated for the nation's involvement in the League of Nations. You remember that for your history books, right? He didn't go back far enough. He should have gone back to Teddy Roosevelt. He should have gone back to the Spanish-American War of 1898 if you really want to find where the imperialism began, Congressman. But far be it for me to correct you. You're much smarter than I am. You're an Ayn Rand acolyte, right? Damn the stopped clock. Anyway, Ron Paul said, quote, we've slipped away from a true republic. Now we're slipping into a fascist system where it's a combination of government and big business and authoritarian rule and the suppression of the individual rights of each and every American citizen, end quote. To which, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know I say an ongoing and constant and continuous amen, amen, and amen. You know, why is there not a prominent progressive or liberal or democratic candidate challenging Barack Obama saying those words, but without the crapola that comes with a Ron Paul? Where's the candidate on the left who has the integrity and the courage to state it unapologetically the way he does, but without the Ron Paul giggly crap, you know, the libertarian horse hockey, which makes zero sense whatsoever. Now, Ron Paul told reporters after his speech that he didn't know his rally was coinciding with the long-established Missouri and Kansas Republican Party events down the street, where Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, a vice presidential prospect, oh, they're all vice presidential prospects, for Christ's sake, was the keynote speaker. No, I don't know anything about that. However, several Republicans slipped away, according to the Associated Press, from the establishment Republican banquets to join the Ron Paul rally. One of them was a guy named Ralph Munyon, a Republican committee man in Kansas City's home county, and he said he agreed with Ron Paul's warnings of, quote, a fascist system, end quote, and his pledge to end the nation's involvement in wars overseas and, the so-called war on drugs. This Mr. Munyon, never heard of him, you haven't either, said, quote, his foreign policy is one of peace, referring to Ron Paul. Now, Ron Paul has repeatedly denounced Obama's recent enactment of a law requiring military custody of anyone suspected of being associated with Al-Qaeda or involved in planning attack on the U.S., blah, blah, blah. So Ron Paul, and I guess it's not real surprising, it's just irritating that it takes a lunatic like Ron Paul to point out the obvious that this country is slipping into fascism.
I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
All right. 25 before the hour. So Ron Paul, of all people, well, no, I mean, it's understandable Ron Paul would say this. Like I say, too bad the guy is, is otherwise a fruit and nut salesman when he's not running for president. But he points out the U.S. is slipping into a fascist system, which it is. The slipping has been going on in this country for the better part of a century. There is always that tension between the fascist, Caucasian, industrialist, capitalist right wing against everybody else. Because, fascism, people don't want to live under fascism. I said 6 or 7 years ago on this program that if the country were to become fascist, and if you were of a certain group within that fascist system, you probably would live fairly comfortably. You have to be in the top one half of 1%. That's the group I was referring to. Everybody else, you never know in a fascist system when your number will come up, when all of a sudden a decision is made that your particular cohort is the one targeted for death or imprisonment or disappearing that particular day. That's the way fascism maintains control, through fear. That's the whole system that was put in place in this country with the engineered attacks on September 11th, 2001, you see. So, here we are. And, of course, the Christian right and the political right will, they thrive on fear. That is the weapon of choice to use against the American public. And the American public is usually so goddamn asleep, not because they're lazy or jerky or stupid, but I mean asleep, politically, asleep, the kind of sleep that comes with ignorance, not stupidity. We're not a stupid people, but we are an ignorant people. So we're asleep, and we hear this stuff, this chatter in the background, blah, 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 terrorists, blah, 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 everything taking care of you, blah, 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 got to suspend some civil liberties, blah, 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 blah. It's just noise, and the dots are never connected, and the bigger picture never emerges, and usually when the bigger picture emerges, it looks something like a swastika. But, paying attention, the American public, not so much. So, Ron Paul makes the point I mean someone who's prominent. They've been making the point at The Nation magazine and at Mother Jones and on this program and a few other programs. Excuse me, Bob Kincaid, head on Radio Network, and I guess a couple of other, perhaps, so-called liberals make the case. There are websites that make the case that we are slipping into a fascist state. But like I said, is the American public paying attention? Not so much. No, you know, other things to do, right? So here's Ron Paul. Now, after warning that the United States is slipping into a fascist system, Herbert Bix, who is a professor at Birmingham University here in the United States, he's a professor in both the history and sociology departments. He also won the Pulitzer Prize for his book Hirohito and the Making of Modern Japan. While he is best known for his work on Japan, he is a scholar of international and U.S. affairs. He said today, Wednesday, quote, Ron Paul is a libertarian and he has racist baggage, but I would never label him with the epithet of isolationist. We should thank him for highlighting U.S. interventionism and where it has been leading us. He, Ron Paul, is the sole exception on the national stage, and certainly among the major presidential candidates, to advocate a peaceful foreign policy and speak out against our slipping into what I would call a militarized police state. We can easily cite legislation under both Bush and Obama. Legislation that has been constantly building and creating extensions of this militarized police state. For example, the FISA statute that was passed after the Watergate scandal to deal with Richard Nixon's illegal actions. It required judicial warrants for wiretapping of Americans. George Bush not only violated this and other laws, he tore down the wall between government and big business by granting immunity to those telecom giants who facilitated this lawbreaking. The USA Patriot Act spawned numerous invasions of privacy. For example, the national security letters, which the FBI abused to forbid anyone, including librarians who received them, from disclosing that they were disclosing information themselves about individuals, even to the point of what books they checked out. And on 10 separate occasions, Congress renewed without any meaningful revision all the powers that this act transferred to the executive branch. The Department of Homeland Security has been established during the Bush crime family era and has operated to reduce civil liberties, especially those of immigrants. In 2006, the Military Commissions Act gave the president unconstitutional powers to detain any individual he says is an enemy combatant anywhere in the world. How different was that congressional vote from the one that was used to grant Hitler powers and do away with the Weimar Constitution? Now, if that seems like an extreme question, in fact, there has been a century of seizure of powers by presidents in this country. And just this year, we had the National Defense Authorization Act, which expanded the scope of the Military Commissions Act so the president, Obama, or whomever, but including Obama, you liberals, Obama could indefinitely detain people who had not been covered, both U.S. citizens and non-citizens, based solely on allegations or rumor. And now we have a new operational phase of the war on terror, assassination of U.S. citizens. Last year, Anwar al-Awlaki and journalist Samir Khan were assassinated. This was a milestone event, a violation of the U.S. Constitution and international law. Additionally, you have the Obama administration developing the tactics of torture and drone assassination, Pentagon and CIA war crimes such as torture and the outsourcing of torture, all contributing to the moral degradation of American society. Obama, it should be pointed out, has also gone further than Bush in the silencing of the whistleblowers. People who would step out of the crowd and say, wait a second, wait a second. And the courts have actually abetted the executive branch's subversion of the Constitution because the courts have refused to question the executive's claim of so-called national security to justify all of this. So, as the power of the executive branch grows, it demands obedience through unconstitutional laws and extensions. And the whole ensemble of policies, laws, and their extensions threaten freedom, they threaten constitutionalism, and they threaten international law. And only Ron Paul has had the guts, as a public figure, as a member of Congress, as a presidential candidate, as somebody who gets the media attention, only Ron Paul has had the guts to put it on the national agenda. Now, you can find this at the Institute for Public Accuracy, if you are so inclined. The today's edition, you can find it online. The Institute for Public Accuracy. It's a good resource, and you should use it. But there you have it. On the one hand, I sometimes feel just furious at the way these pig, disgusting, so-called Republican presidential candidates go after Obama because he's a Muslim, go after Obama because he wasn't born in the U.S., go after Obama because he wants to abort babies. You know, you sick son of a bitches, why don't you go after Obama because he is bringing fascism to this country? And I'll tell you why you don't. It's because you agree with that part of it. You want fascism, you right-wingers. You always have. You always will. We'll be right back. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Yes, sir. We're people gonna rise up, get their share. We're people gonna rise up, and take what's there. I sometimes wonder how long I can, and I have to think about this. I have to, because my livelihood depends on this. How long can I maintain an audience by continually talking about this the threat of fascism and the fact that the political and religious right are not just destroying the country, but destroying the planet. You know, when you reach a certain age, and God knows I've reached it, where you have a platform of your own history to look back over, and that history includes not just you, but all the people you've touched, all the people who have touched you, all of your education, all of your experience, all of your knowledge, all the wisdom that you've accumulated over the years, all the struggles you've gone through to try to approach at least a point of being honest with yourself, if not clear-cut integrity. With all of that, it is impossible for me, for you, for anyone who has gone through or has taken a path that is one that tries to minimize the fake and maximize, you know, what's real. It's impossible to not be concerned. The question I always have every time I do a program is, you know, where's that line where the person on the radio can be, you know, shrieking and frothing and foaming at the mouth and talking about this threat and that threat, and maintain the attention of people who might be listening and who might hook in to what's being said and then go do their own research. How do you maintain that without pushing people away with, oh, for Christ's sake, here he goes again, or here she goes again, or, you know what I'm saying? And not to get all whiny on you or not to bring up personal stuff on this program other than, you know, buy my daughter's Girl Scout cookies. Or not buy them, but take a sponsorship of a program and you get one free. Not to get all personal and weird on you, but I bring this up because I know that you have to, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. You have to consider these things also. I mean, you and I are not that much different in our assessment of what's going on, what has gone on, and what's around the corner. We're on the same page. And that's the part that makes me question sometimes whether or not I should continue to do this program this way. The answer that comes back to me is if I don't do this program this way, I don't have a program. I don't know what else to do. When I got into talk radio all those years ago, it wasn't like this. Well, it may have been, but I didn't have the awareness. You know, you go back 27, 28 years in your life, and if you can, and I'm not sure any of us can, take a look at that person then and compare it to that person now. And I know a lot of people listening say, well, 20 years ago, I was four. No, you know what I'm talking about. You have to be of a certain age in order to do that. Right? Come on. So, it just raises an issue, and I'm not looking for feedback on this or anything of the sort. This is just, you know, like rambling, stream of consciousness, and the microphone happens to be open, and we're not in a commercial break, so, you know, it's going out over the air. But I do wonder about this frequently, if not constantly, when, you know, when I think about this program. When I think about, is there any reason for this program? Is there, or is it all just part of this huge ball of bubble gum that people chew on during the day or during the evening, and it really is inconsequential and eventually gets flavorless? How's that for an analogy? Or is that a metaphor? No, it's a simile. No, it's a metaphor. So, I wonder sometimes, and I worry about the things that anyone who has small children in their family, whether they're your children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, cousins, whatever they are, when when you have little kids running around underfoot, or, you know, someplace else where they live with their parents or their auntie or their grandmother, whatever. When you have little kids, you know, and you look at them and you think, Jesus Christ, they don't know what's going on. Now, I'm sure that when my mother was a child, her parents could look at her and say, she doesn't know what's going on. World War I, vicious, horrific war, the advent of the Depression. Of course, I guess my mother knew about that for sure. But I guess it's true in every generation. But this one seems uniquely horrific. And maybe those of us who grew up in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, maybe, you know, our adults, our parents, our grandparents looked at us with this overarching threat of nuclear annihilation. Maybe they said the same thing. God, these little kids don't know what they're growing into. But still, this time, it seems uniquely horrific. Not just this religious craziness, that it just seems like there's this death match between rational thought and this spooky, crazy things in the sky and angels and demons and possessions. On the other hand, it's just, man. So, I don't know. Do you worry? I worry. I think about this stuff a lot, and not sure how to resolve it. Of course, I can't resolve it. The only place I can resolve it, if I could resolve it, which I can't, is inside my little cone of existence, which eventually disappears into the infinite anyway. So I guess when all said and done, really doesn't matter, does it? Huh? So much for deep thinking. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.